Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, a continuation on our form of healing. The effort is to try to bring people with differing sides together to see if, in a more objective and fair-minded way, we can find a way to start the process of healing the enormous conflict that is resolved between the local and the national boards, the local stations, national directors, director against director on the national board. We have a lot to contend with, but I'm hopeful that people who have tried to remain neutral and objective before making up their mind can see that there are reasonable issues that have to be addressed from all sides. And to paint everyone on one side as the enemy and target them, and to suggest that the only way this problem can be resolved is if there is a mass resignation of people who disagree, mass firings of people who have supposedly been a part of the Pacifica's National Board's efforts to take over the local stations, to strip them of their autonomy, and to replace it with more corporatized positions, is not going to happen. In fact, based upon the current programs of demonstrations, going into people's data banks, trying to force people to resign by extortion and threatening methods, which I've investigated, is counterproductive. And also, what happens, just what happens, if everything we were told about a particular issue were not true? What if only partial information was true? What if we took our arguments out of context and then went off on a campaign where we were misguided? Would we have the capacity as individuals to say, in retrospect, with all the facts in, we really shouldn't have done this, or maybe we should have done that? That's what I'm trying to help happen. I'm hopeful that individuals will come together, sit down, speak with one another. It is remarkable how many times people have been attacked, slandered, libeled, and yet the people doing so have never spoken with these individuals, not once. I find that rather remarkable. It would be hard to imagine that you would be so personal in your hatred or animosity towards someone without ever giving the benefit of seeing whether or not that hatred or animosity is true. And yet, that is where we're at today. More of the same will not cause a healing. It'll only intensify the positions of all people concerned. I've invited a group of individuals to this forum today who I believe all have something constructive to share with us. And I'm still waiting to get some of the people online, and so I don't want to announce all the people who are going to be available in case some are not able to. But hopefully we'll have Juan Gonzalez, though we're playing phone tag right at this moment, but hopefully he'll get on. Andrea Sisco, who is a current national board member, was a local board member from BAI, and who is currently under attack. In fact, her house is being picketed. Letters to all the people that she does business with have been sent. Phone calls have been also made against her, and in an effort to both destroy her reputation and paint her in a very negative way. Does she deserve it? We'll find out. I'll ask her some questions. And I'm also going to be having, time permitting, Eutrice Lead on. She has been at the center of a lot of this current controversy. And I believe that some important questions should be addressed and answered in this forum. We're in the communications business. That means people should dialogue, hopefully in a way that is respectful of one another. My first guest, professor of journalism, Long Island University, author of an important book on public broadcasting for 30 years, having committed himself in a very positive way to the local board of BAI, and then the national board, is Ralph Engelman. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be here, Gary.
First, you see now some of the charges, countercharges, and how this entire series of events have played themselves out, at least up to this moment. unless something constructive is done, what do you feel would be the outcome at both the national and local levels?
Well, I don't want to even think about what might happen if we don't move ahead and move constructively. And I have a few thoughts about directions we can go in that can help resolve the situation at WBAI. But first, let me just mention a couple of what I consider the obstacles to that resolution. And I want to discuss really concepts, and I think there are differences here, serious differences about journalism, about what Pacifica's mission is or should be, that need to be identified. And then I want to, you know, share with you at least some thoughts for how we might move from what I think has been a constructive dialogue on your program to concrete steps to resolve the crisis. You know, I think one of the problems that I've seen as a professor of journalism is some confusion about the tradition of a certain tradition in Pacifica's journalism, which really draws on what you might call a long history of engaged journalism, a very unique tradition in this country. It goes back to Tom Paine and Frederick Douglass, Max Eastman, John Reed, later Ida Tarbell and the Mutt Grakers and I.F. Stone. And this is a kind of journalism, and really what Lou Hill and other people that followed him in Pacifica wanted to do was to apply this tradition of engaged journalism, critical journalism, independent journalism to the radio. And I think that among some of the majority on the board member, there's some discomfort or confusion about this tradition, which has led to attacks on Amy Goodman, the removal of Dan Coughlin from Pacifica Network News, leading to the departure of Vern Avery Brown. I think one of the things that we need to do is reaffirm the this tradition, which I think Natural Living reflects as well, of really taking going much further than mainstream journalism dares to go. Two other things I simply want to mention that I think have been issues or problems. One is a kind of, at times, racial appeal or race card that I think has confused the issues. I don't think that the race issue is the fundamental issue here, but have made it more difficult to address the concrete problems in front of Pacifica. At the time of the Berkeley crisis, when the lockout occurred, there were accusations that the station was hostage to a group of aging white 60s radicals. Later in the BAI crisis, sort of racial charges and have been leveled. The National Public Radio, when it about 3 weeks ago did its a program on the BAI crisis, quoted Eutrice Leed as saying that the protests are rooted in quote white supremacist ideology, and he quotes her as saying, "We're talking here today about the European psychological warfare against Africans, and that's what the whole thing is about. I need you stalwart soldiers out there. Pick up the phone, make your call, and put an end to white supremacist thinking. This is a call to arms. I told you, it's a war." Now, it seems to me that this is, first of all, clearly doesn't quite make sense. You cannot, since people like Bernard White, Janice K. Bryant, Mimi Rosenberg, whatever you might want to say about them, cannot be characterized as white males. And I think that in general the racial, let's say, definition of the problem, which will crop up at times, has been very counterproductive.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Did you actually speak with Eutrice to see if she did make those statements and ask her the context if she did?
No, I didn't, but you know, after the so-called coup, the Christmas coup, I did meet with Eutrice for 2.5 hours. We had a very open conversation in which we aired our differences. So that, yes, there, you know, I have been in touch with her and all parties here. As a matter of fact, Gary, you should know that your effort at sort of opening up dialogue was not the first attempt. After the lockout at KPFA, a group of us worked very hard. We went to the national board meeting. We wanted there to be discussions, and we wanted to try to transcend the he said, she said aspect of the crisis and bring important figures in independent and alternative media to the table and have them present and discuss, which were essentially rebuffed. But to answer your question, you know, my involvement, I think the involvement of many people has not been really where we're trying to seize on people's, let's say, out of context statement that they've made. But I think that, for example, this problem of the racial definition of the issue and or accusations that there are sort of Svengali-like whites who are manipulating African Americans at the station, this sort of thing, is just not helpful. But let me move on to, I think, more important issues. The last one that I want to just touch on before we talk about positive steps has to do with, and I think this is something that has not been discussed enough or hardly at all, but what has happened in Pacifica is something related to a very broad trend in public broadcasting, that is the movement towards a kind of audience-based kind of emphasis on audience numbers. There is actually a figure, a man named David Giovannone, who is kind of the numbers guru in the field of public radio, and he has he and others like him emerged sort of after the 1980s when you had the Reagan cutbacks and public funding for public broadcasting, and David Giovannone advocated focus groups, emphasis on audience share, you know, homogenization of programming to a certain extent to keep the listeners, do away with the sort of offbeat programs, emphasis on arbitron ratings. And many people within even mainstream public radio, national public radio, have felt that this had a very negative effect and a very chilling effect, really, on public radio, although it was a useful tool, you know, for raising money and corporate underwriting and the like. And what happened is that they had, going back really to the early 1990s, David Giovannone caught the ear of some of the people within Pacifica, and I think that there was an over-reliance on his approach. And this culminated in February of 2000 when he gave a report to the National Board meeting in Washington, in which represented a remarkable attack on Pacifica. Really, it while he acknowledged that Pacifica's audience had grown significantly, was then over 800,000 people listened each week. He called it too little, too late. He accused the people, the Pacifica programmers, of being stuck in time. He said that he held as the standard national public radio. And he, just quote one sentence, he says, by any objective measure of public service, Pacifica has crossed the line from underperformance to irrelevance. And this report that basically said that Pacifica was irrelevant, that was actually posted on the Pacifica website. And it seems to me that certainly it's been important as a former local and national board member. Never was satisfied with the number of listener subscribers that we've had. We should know who our listeners are. But I think it's dangerous to make a fetish out of the numbers. This is, again, a failure to understand what Pacifica has done historically, that often programs that it has initiated and broadcast have had a tremendous impact that can't be measured in the number of people who are listening initially, whether it was the landmark program in which the first time on the airwaves people spoke about gay life on KPFK in 1963. There were reports literally around the world about this broadcast. The interview with the FBI agent in 1962 that broke this taboo about criticizing J. Edgar Hoover and led to one of the McCarthyite Senate committees conducting hearings on Pacifica, whether it was Chris Koch going to Vietnam, whether it was John Kalish reporting on nuclear power before anyone else, whether it's Amy Goodman talking about East Timor before anybody else. The impact has been tremendous and cannot be measured purely in terms of those numbers. And what's happened is, because of the emphasis on numbers, as I understand it, what has happened is that stations such as PFW in Washington, D.C., and a station I helped get off the ground with many others, as well as KPFT in Houston, have turned into largely music stations, jazz and country music, respectively. And the numbers may increase, but that doesn't mean that the influence will increase and that the impact will increase, or that our mission will be, you know, better fulfilled that way. So,
do you feel there's not should not be music?
Well, there should be music, but I don't think that the number of listeners, that this the model of consumerism should not, you know, confuse what really the mission of Pacifica is, which is to be an independent source of,
okay,
of information, now, culture.
All right. There's two points I'd like for you to address, if you would, please. And one comes from my own personal experience, and one comes from the many interviews I've done with individuals, both on and off the record. In order to have a forum and a budget and producers for any of the independent producers to do the kind of outstanding producing that they frequently do on this station and within the network, it requires income. And for years, absolutely decades, we have not had that kind of income to support these individuals. No one makes a living wage on the air, though it's highly ironic that some of us, myself included, have never been paid a penny. No producers, no phone bills, no salary, nothing. Others, they're paid a salary, producers are paid, telephone costs, very selective, depending upon the power of the click there. And they're clicks that have always run BAI. I've been on the air. I've been in the studios. And when you're there every day, as I was for 20 years, and only up here at my own office where I have an other studio for the last 4.5 years, you get to see this internal politic that transcends what the mission should be. In the end, many of the missions are either honored because someone, and generally there's many someones who come on the air who bring their own high-quality standards, and they generally work for nothing, and they do the right job. Others, however, others have absolute control, more control than a station manager, more control than a program director. I've seen program directors physically assaulted at the station. I was in the room when one had a chair beaten against him, and he didn't do a thing about it, by one of the on-air personalities that he had suggested. He simply wanted to change their time. There was no complaint by anyone, yet everyone knew that happened. Everyone knew. Everyone knew also that someone would ride a motorcycle and actually bring it in and rev it up right in front of the studio so everybody could hear on the air the station the program was getting off. You had no control. You had utter anarchy. You also had no money. Electric being turned off, phones being turned off. Whatever equipment that had any value was stolen. Everyone knew who was stealing it, but no one had the courage to stop them. So on the one hand, if we want to highlight some of the outstanding and notable programs, we also have to put into the context this happened at the sacrifice of a lot of people who had a great deal of difficulty day in and day out because we're a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week station. And we have to look at every single hour and every single program and what are the resources those people need in order to do the best job they can, and are they the best people to do that job, with the assumption being that anybody, no matter what their skills or talent or motivation, once they get on the air, it's damn nearly impossible to get them off. And at BAI and some of the other stations, it doesn't matter how bad you are. And sometimes I think you would agree some of the programs are simply unlistenable. They're so biased, so lacking in objectivity, so lacking in standards. So I think we, at some point we have to not just show the best that we have been, but the worst that we have also been. And the fact there's been no money to pay for any of this. And so a lot of people are saying, what's wrong with trying to make the stations more accountable for what, let's say, for example, for the budgets they have to have if people are to be paid? On the one hand, you say you've got a union, though no union representative has ever spoken with me in my entire history, though I'm a member of AFTRA. On the other hand, they'll say, but we're not making enough money. And I'm saying, none of us are making it, some of us are making nothing. So there's total chaos. Or selective support of the old buddy system. It's as incestuous at BAI as in any other corporation. Let us be honest and let us be fair. No problem's going to be resolved unless we look at the total problem. And if the total problem also has to be, then if we're not going to have a budget, if we're not going to care about numbers, if we don't care that anyone listens to a program, as long as we feel we're serving our need, and if three people listen to a program, that's okay with me. I don't mind. But then, where are we going to pay for the studio we have down on Wall Street? And why did we move there? And why do we have new equipment? Because who's going to pay for the new equipment? Who's going to pay for the ISDN lines to go out across the country? Who's going to pay for all these services? It seems like, on the one hand, we want something ideologically that we're not willing to accept how we have to get it practically. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And if you think I'm full of
think that you put your finger on many real issues and problems that need to be addressed, and I'd like to suggest, you know, a way in which we can begin to do so. But my point when I was talking about the emphasis on the somewhat mindless emphasis on ratings is that's not the way to do it. But I in no way suggesting that things were that there were not very serious problems along the lines of the ones that you've indicated prior to the current crisis. Let me suggest both a this throw out for whatever it's worth, a suggestion on how to move, you know, this current situation along, and then begin to deal with these larger issues. All right, what is to be done? I would want to throw out one scenario here. It seems to me that the that Utrice Lead is I think it would be an important step towards addressing the problems and moving ahead if she were to step aside as station manager would consider that rejoin the staff. When she initially took over as interim general manager, she said this was not her intention. She didn't plan to remain in that position. I think it could be a magnanimous act. Whatever one's view of Utrice Lead, she has polarized things to an extent that it seems to me it would be difficult to really move ahead if she's in that position. A second step might be to create a kind of interim leadership. Maybe made up of representatives of some of the different groups, perhaps a respected person among those who have been fired and banned, a respected person who has remained and worked inside the station. Perhaps a local board person might participate as well. The notion here is a little bit like a coalition government or a government of national reconciliation or national unity. But I do feel, for better or for worse, that really Utrice Lead stepping aside would be a precondition for something like this happening. Then I think it might be useful to have a immediate establishment of a search committee for a permanent station manager, a committee that is locally based, that is broadly representative, that will either whoever constitutes it or the body itself would need to develop criteria for the position. I think that another important step would be reinvesting the local advisory boards with significant responsibilities to address some of the chaos you've talked about. When I was on the local board had the responsibility of monitoring the finances of the station, evaluating management, so forth and so on. I think that we need to look, as California's looked at the possibility of maybe electing some members of the local advisory board, although elections by themselves are not a panacea or not a guarantee of
I'd like to back up to one statement because it's really at the heart of this. And my investigation has shown that beyond all other things, there's a primary difference in ideology. On the one hand are those individuals who feel that what the local stations have lacked as far as management is are individuals who've had the experience to properly run a radio station based upon the kind of content that the non-commercial stations should be offering, at the same time not to allow self-empowered cliques to dictate and run the stations as if they were their own little domains. And I know every program director, know every station manager for the last 25 years at BAI. Every one of them has run into a buzzsaw. Every one. Now, you on the local board should have known that, because whoever controlled the little cliques inside controlled management. Management has never controlled what has gone on there. I can tell you from conversations I've had with Samori Marksman, who was a close friend, time and time again, he said in my apartment at night, it was the only place he could feel peaceful enough just to let some steam off, and he was in dangerous poor health, and I advocated that he take a break and take a vacation and get out of there, that the job was killing him. Quite frankly, in the end, BAI killed Samori Marksman because of the stress he was under and the unrelenting anger people had at him because he was trying to bring some sense of professional standards to the station. In fact, I even have his last memo on how he saw taking the station forward, and he addresses the megalomaniacs on the air. He addresses, by the way, this is never made public, ever, and I don't know if you ever heard about this memo because it was never distributed around. I have it right here, and here's a more revealing one. This is dated October 1994, and it addresses what you were saying, but it addresses it with a caveat, and that's what I'm asking about the caveat. Everything sounds perfect when we're talking about having the local board establish the criteria and who should be the, you know, recommendations for the station manager. But what if that local board has a concept that a local manager should only have a certain amount of power and not enough to really make sure the station and its on-air personalities are held accountable to professional standards? We have no one at the station right now. There's no one at the network right now that if someone goes on the air and rants and raves and makes a lot of irresponsible and wrongful statements, that anything will happen to that person. But ask how many people, when they go to listen to some of the programs, simply won't listen to anything because they consider some of the shows so irresponsible, and that no one comes and says, you know something, you're saying this, this, and this, and that could be, you know, very anti-Semitic, which, by the way, as I'm sure you know, has happened. And yet the person says, well, that's my freedom of speech. Yes, but freedom of speech doesn't mean you have a freedom of speech to lie or be irresponsible or be in such a way that incites anger or prejudice towards any specific group. You have to have a manager who can be respected enough and have the authority to be able to maintain standards. And this is what one group says. Where's the standards? Samori was a part of that group. Samori was also part of the group that was very critical of Valerie Van Isler. I have all the memos. I have all the letters. Here's just one, October 1994, and he's addressing the fund drive. I met with Samori at that time, and I said, Samori, please do not increase the fundraising. If you do, you're putting on the station on a one-way track to shutting down. And he said, what do you mean? I said, Samori, every fundraising, everyone is stressed to the max. Everybody has to perform and perform and perform. And it wears people out. And the moment we finally do get that goal, the next fund drive, you increase it. And he said, well, it's, you know, Valerie says this is what we have to ask. And so I went to Valerie, and I have all my memos. I said, Valerie, please do not increase the amount we have to keep raising. Because if you do, there's going to be a time when we can't raise it, yet you've built an overhead based upon this ever-increasing budget. And then one time we raised $1 million. And guess what? Thereafter, every fundraising was $1 million. And yet, there are only a few of us who can bring in some major dollars. And it's a tough, tough, tough job. It's very expensive, time-consuming, and stressful. So I said, why not cut the overhead and cut back and just serve the regular mission? Even if you have a smaller audience, so everyone isn't stressed to death. And yet that was never accepted. Here's what Samori said, that there are limitations. Quote, these mornings show limitations are reflective of and in turn reflect upon programming which precedes as well as follows it. In other words, there are consequences of larger station-wide problems of budgeting, personnel structure, planning, reinvestment, and development which cannot be fully addressed in a morning show vacuum. It is therefore follows that our approach to correcting the deeply rooted problems of VAI and other stations must be holistic, aimed at repairing every aspect in every area of programming and those existing in other sectors of operations. Moreover, I believe that from a purely organizational personnel standpoint, the strategy of concentrating all of our programming resources, limited as they are, in one area of programming could be problematic in terms of our completely ignoring, to our peril, other critical areas with significant growth potential. Additionally, I caution that it may well prove to be a dangerous precedent to lay the foundation for what could, under certain circumstances, ultimately evolve into, quote, star complexes, elitism, and the kind of prissy prima donna deformities with which so many of our older producers throughout the Pacifica system appear to be afflicted. I submit another point of caution, that we move very carefully when adopting ostensibly remedial strategies, which are based upon limited information or upon analysis of our problems, which are predicated upon the realities of others. By this I mean that if we were to examine the hugely successful talk shows and public affairs programs across the country, including in commercial radio, very few are in the morning, indeed, in our area, Rush Limbaugh, Bob Grant, the Rileys, Kings, Birds, etc., are all late afternoon, midday, and our afternoon programming, not to mention our very own Gary Nall, who outdraws virtually every other commercial as well as public radio station in the tri-state area at high noon. Then he goes on to talk about how any strategy to help the station must consider the entire 24 hours of selecting people who have professional qualifications. And he is very specific in the idea that too often we do not hold high enough standards for people to maintain at the station, and therefore the person's audience develops an adaptive ability to the person on the air rather than to what the standard should be. His argument is that in serving the needs of Pacifica's original foundation doesn't mean that we have to bottom feed for either talent, producers, station managers, or anyone else. He believes that we should find what we need for every form of programming and do tie-ins, work in cooperation with universities, with the, quote, individuals who are instrumental in facilitating joint ventures like Berkeley Academy of Music, the Apollo Theater, the Hayden Planetarium, El Museo, Del Barrio, Yale University's Drama School, or any number of the great institutions in our listening area. And he wanted to establish all these, and plus international community development. And when I look at what he put out, quite frankly, I've not heard or seen anything that was better for the station, all of which still maintained the original standard, but it raised the original mission, but it raised the standards. And so there wouldn't be any cliques controlling everything for their self-interest. And trust me, there are cliques controlling interest and always have been. And there wouldn't be anyone dominating the station manager. The station manager would be held accountable to be open and cooperative with everyone, the local board and the department heads and the volunteers as well as the listeners. And that's one of the things that I think that we have to ask. If you take one group of people, their needs and their political ideology is going to give you one kind of management. If you take another one, they're going to suggest a different management. Herein, you've got two ideas of what a management person should be, and based upon the kind of management you get is how the station is going to be run. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I appreciate your, citing Samori Marksman, who was someone I also worked with for many years, discussed these issues also with him at great length. And as a matter of fact, he was the one who asked me to come in and co-chair the capital campaign that to help finance the move to Wall Street. But I think and I think many of the problems that you address, of course, cannot be denied. You know, I wrote, along with Mimi Rosenberg, Pepsi Charles, and Karen Frillman, in October of 99, way before the BAI crisis, but after the Berkeley lockout, a paper called Pacifica's Crisis, Underlying Causes and Prescriptions for Renewal. And we, among other things, we called for a Pacifica-wide dialogue on precisely the issues you discussed: governance, programming, audience, and the like. And I think that that is desperately needed. But the point that I want to make, and God knows it's the point that Samori Markson would have made, is that it has to be made within the framework of Pacifica's mission and history, which doesn't mean that we can't improve greatly on the way that is done, but we cannot look for quick fixes by abandoning the mission, simply looking at numbers and getting, Arbitron ratings at any cost, irrespective of what the substance of the programs are. The founders of Pacifica, you know, they conceived Pacifica's importance not simply in terms of the programming, but of course they wanted not to replicate the hierarchical way of doing things that you have at, let's say, commercial and mainstream radio stations. At the same time, it's been very difficult to get it right, and there have been many problems and many crises. But this is the first crisis in which the leadership on the board has challenged and questioned the mission itself, and again put on the webpage a statement basically suggesting that its Pacific had become irrelevant. And I think we need to reconstitute Pacifica with on all levels, with people who of goodwill, who will discuss all these issues. And we believe that there should be we advocate in the so-called blue paper a process by which locally and then nationally that there is a series of discussions and leading to a larger summit about the future of Pacifica.
I fully agree with that, and that's where I'm trying, hopefully, to help to the degree I can to get those meetings going and to at least be there to see that people don't tear each other's hearts out.
You see,
because right now, quite frankly, there is just so much hatred, and I don't believe someone has the right to. You have a right to a difference of view, and that's what makes our society healthy. You don't have a right to punish someone who doesn't agree with you, slander them, or libel. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I agree. And I think that we really are, the differences are not about personalities. They're about ideas. They're about politics. They're about ways to look at radio, ways to look at running a radio station. But
do you agree that it's unfair for some people to be paid to do their show and others of us not to be paid?
Well, you see, that I think is a complex issue.
What's complex about it?
Well, because, you know,
if I put 40 hours worth of work in, if I laid out $128,000 last year to produce my shows, and no one ever gives us as much as a let us help you with any of that, and other people who do their shows, and I respect them for doing their shows, and every one of their single expenses are paid, plus they're giving a salary. Is there something wrong with that scenario?
Well, let me frame the
question. And there are a lot of people like me on the station who don't get paid.
Right. I mean, there are different models and different ways of conceiving how
is
the
one
station
of them, is one of them what kind of friendship you have with the station manager? I mean, if we're going to be democratic,
right,
let's not be hypocritical.
Right.
Either everybody gets paid or nobody gets paid. Is that fair or not fair? If we're all contributing equally.
Well, it seems to me that in my knowledge of Pacifica's history, that volunteers have played a very important role in its work, which is not to justify inequities, but there are several different models one can pursue. One is that you've got a core paid staff that do virtually all or almost all of the programming, or do you have a smaller core of programmers who function more like editors, who facilitate other voices coming in. There's not a simple yes or no answer in terms of how to structure this.
That's just one of the issues I'm trying to raise with you. I'm trying to show you that there's an enormous amount of hypocrisy. People say freedom of speech, but for who? People say equity, but for who? My idea is that we should have equality for everyone, where no one has dominance in or favoritism. Because right now, that's not the way it works. And I believe that this is one of the problems. I'd rather see the station go backwards to a less... to a smaller station format, serving specifically and exclusively the original mission, and to take down, deconstruct this overhead, because we've created an overhead that no matter how you cut it, you're not going to be able to maintain this overhead at the station, these expenses at the station, this management system at the station, and not increase your audience base. So if you want a small audience, that's fine. You can have an audience where no one listens if that's what will please someone. But by God, don't then turn around and scream at someone who's the people who are saying, if you're going to expand the station, its budget, its mission, then you better be able to have a professional model do it. It's like one group says anything professional or corporate we're opposed to. The other says anything that just lets us do what we want without accountability is what we support. You've got to bring those two together. Is it possible? Only time will tell.
Right. Well, I think that one of the...
Would you agree with that or disagree with that?
I think so. I think that there is an issue. There should be some kind of programming council and some way of evaluating program. I think that the local boards should play a role in that. But I just want to temper this by saying that the tragedy of Pacifica, and I don't mean to excuse this chaos and the problems that you've mentioned, is the fact that in American mass media, there is so, and certainly in radio, so little relatively free space that this is what leads to this fight to the death over airtime and the maneuvering and the like. And it doesn't excuse it. We have to define standards and mechanisms for so that the future Gary Nulls and Amy Goodmans can get on the air when they come to a BAI. But it seems to me, and I think that you're saying that maybe growth, unquestioned growth, doesn't make sense. I agree with you. This is partially what I was saying.
You can't have it. You can't. I was opposed to the move down to Wall Street. I oppose this move. I said it was going to be a disaster, and it's been a disaster. All right? I opposed people getting paid. I would rather only see those people who were anyone on air I didn't believe should be paid. Because we don't have the budget for it. And to selectively pay some people when other people work just as hard, and I know producers who do shows overnight that almost have no audience, who work as hard as any other time of the day. So I'm speaking not for myself, because I'm going to do the show, if I can do it, for the next 10 years without ever receiving a nickel. That's fine with me, because I don't do it for the money. But a lot of people have come to me, and I mean a lot of them, who are terrified to speak openly because of how they're going to be attacked. And they see the viciousness that other people are being attacked, and they don't want that in their life. And they'll say, Gary, something's wrong here. I work X amount of hours to produce a show, and yet it never gets publicized. No cross-station promotion. One person in particular I was speaking with who did a show that I thought was an award-winning caliber show, and on a specific topic that needs to be addressed within our society. That person, it's as if it didn't happen. It's as if the show didn't happen. And I see how much sacrifice people make. Well, I believe that sacrifice shouldn't be selective. We all sacrifice because of what the station means and its mission to us means. We're doing this from our heart. And I believe that we should be small and meaningful and purposeful. I believe that our demise will come when we try to compete on a commercial, even NPR. I don't believe that's a model, even though we share the same audience. So my view is we are looking at nothing but chaos and crisis by trying to grow, because we cannot grow unless we take on a professional model, and we don't have a professional political mindset to do so. And anyone on the board who's brought that has been attacked.
Right. Well, I think that you put your finger on, I think, one of the big problems, and that we can't think simply in terms of replicating NPR or building the numbers in a mindless way. But let me just sort of pull back and try to at least pull together my thoughts. First of all, I think what you've done on this program and on this series of airing different points of view, trying to find common ground is a very constructive step. However, a structure is needed for negotiation, or I don't think we're going to go anywhere. And I think that one possible scenario, as I said, with this three-step scenario, is to have Utrice lead, step aside, to have an interim collective leadership representing people who are inside and outside the station, where the reinstatement of the people who have been removed from the station would be on the table, creation of a programming council, creating a search committee, and then beginning this Pacifica-wide, starting on a local level, dialogue, addressing all the issues that we've talked about today, including the hard issues that you've raised.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing your insights with us, and that's the direction we're all trying to take. It's just that I hope that people realize that when you bring people who have such different views, views that are politically different, economic philosophies different, even though I believe all of these views are at their level trying to respect the original mission, though they're coming at it from different points of view. And I don't believe people should be attacked because they have a different point of view. If that's the case, then no one will ever be honest again. No one will ever put up another letter again. No one will ever bring forward an idea again. I would rather have people bring forward ideas and where I could say I agree or disagree with the idea than to say, you bring forth anything we don't like, you're dead. You're dead. I only want to hear what I agree with. I do not want to hear what I disagree with. Well, then who's going to ever bring forth an idea? Who's ever going to come forward if they're going to see their picture on every E-net and have pickets outside their door and have their computers illegally tapped and have their employers harassed so the person loses their livelihood? How would you like everybody to show up at Long Island University and call you all kinds of names and slander you and then go to your home and slander you, and when your wife comes out, if you have a wife, to yell at her? How would you feel about that, Ralph?
Actually, I've had that experience.
How did it feel?
It's been, well, it wasn't great, but, you know, it...
You think that's a way to get you to... Do you think by trying to pressure you into agreeing with someone that that's a way to go about a democratic process of change?
No, but, you know...
Threats and intimidation have nothing to do with democracy. If someone's going to use the word democracy, then by God, let them use it in an objective and fair-minded way. I keep hearing people wrap around their neck the concept of democracy who are totally undemocratic in the process. Shouldn't we at least have everyone cool off, chill out, slow down, and put the daggers back in their pockets if they want to sit down? Because if you think there's going to be peace when we have a meeting, if people cannot stop and at least show what it might be like to be in the other person's shoes.
But, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I think Juan Gonzalez, whom you'll be interviewing later, has suggested something along these lines. It seems to me that you can't simply criticize some of the tactics of the resistance and of the critics outside the context of what has followed, the way in which people were fired, the way in which the national elements of the national board have basically trashed the whole Pacifica tradition and acted in irresponsible ways. So that I'm not justifying or arguing for or against one tactic or another, but I think it has to be seen in a larger framework of a crisis, an institutional crisis that dates back certainly to the early 90s, culminating in the lockout at KPFA, and then the firings here and bannings here. So that I think that that needs to be said.
I agree with that, Ralph, and because I've been here all this time and I have not taken sides, I'm not on either side, Ralph, because I see the strength and weaknesses in everyone's argument. And I look at my side as the side that wherever the facts lie. And sometimes the facts can scare you. You know, there's a statement that the truth will get you angry, but a lie will kill you. And I've seen so many lies, so many lies, and so many self-serving statements, and so much disinformation and misinformation. And the hard part is it's no different than any of the other investigations I do. You think when I do an investigation about the amalgam and dentist, that the dentists are happy for that investigation? No. Or fluoride in our water supply? No. Or the AIDS issue? No. I'm used to looking at the larger perspective. In that larger perspective, however, you got to ask yourself, who is most likely within the different camps to come together and be able to offer up constructive dialogue other than, here's our idea. You leave the board or you quit, and then we can have something worth working for. What's the other person going to say? If everyone on the board is forced off, I had a friend of mine who's an attorney, and he's an attorney in Washington, D.C., and he had been affiliated with the FCC. And he made an interesting comment. He heard last week's show, and I got a call after the show, and he said, Gary, have you considered this? Are you aware that the FCC is extremely hostile towards Pacifica because of what it did with some FBI reports, and one of the people in the FBI later went on to be associated with the FCC? And they don't forget. They hold grudges for a long period of time, forever. And they would love for this to get worse. He said there's a few technicalities you should pay attention with. If more than 50% of the board, the national board, resigns in a given year, that means the FCC could step in. And if they have the opportunity, don't bet they wouldn't. And then they could just take it away. And then what people feared most would happen. I said I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know that. I don't know all the laws governing broadcasting and licensing. He said, yeah. He said, wouldn't it be interesting if all the people one day just said, the heck with it. This isn't worth it. This isn't worth any of this, and just walked away. And then the FCC walks in the next day. So I think that we have to take a very careful look at, are the methods currently being used the most constructive methods for positive change? And I do not believe that we're going to have positive change until we reconsider. If every time I wanted to get someone to change, I berated them, belittled them, and libeled them until one day they said, okay, Gary, I have no self-esteem left. You win. I'm just a piece of dirt under your feet. That's not democracy, and that's not a way of healing anything. And that's not the way that we should be proceeding. And unfortunately, a lot of radical elements have come into the picture, and some of the reasonable voices on both sides have been usurped. And you know and I know that some conflicts draw people who really have no interest in ultimately the conflict. They use it as if they did. They wrap themselves in the slogans as if they did. But they're just kind of, they're prana suckers. They live off negativity. They feast on it. They don't want to see anyone, they don't want to see constructive change because that's not where they're at. And I think we have to be very careful that it doesn't get to the stage where all this ends up in anarchy, where no one cares anymore, and then you have a civil war. Do you see what this is about?
Right.
And we've got to stop that. We've got to stop the fighting to start the healing.
But in some instances, it means, you know, some key people stepping aside to make it possible for other elements to come and take us to the next step.
You may be absolutely right there. It's not for me to judge that. I have no right and will not make that, even though I have my own personal opinions. I believe that I would be biasing my argument if I said who I believe should step aside. But I do believe that if people are approached in a reasonable manner and it is suggested to them that that they step aside for this reason, and you get their feedback on it and you listen to what they have to say and you try in some way to see what it is to be them, see what their arguments are, listen to what they have to say and see if you can learn something from their position before judging it, then in time, many people will step aside. But a lot of people, if you say, you step aside now, or your butt's nothing, what's a person's ego going to do? You think they're going to say, thank you, Ralph, for humiliating me. God, thank you, Ralph, for making me, in the eyes of the world, look like I'm garbage and a racist. And God, I love the way that you articulate your words, so I feel like I shouldn't have been born, and I curse my mother. And God, if only we were there at the creation, Ralph, I wouldn't be here, so you could... No one's going to be happy about that. Forget politics. Forget economics. Forget the station. We're dealing in the end with personalities. And personalities, if you walk up to them in the wrong way and you demean them in the wrong way, not you personally, Ralph, I'm not saying this you, what's the likelihood of that person wanting to step aside? And some people won't. The more you push them, the more they're going to resist. Because maybe that's the only thing their self-esteem has going for them, is the fact that they can resist something. Even if they're wrong. How many times in life have people who, from President Nixon to, in my opinion, Bill Clinton, who should have stepped aside and didn't, because they had a lot of self-esteem riding upon that. So I believe that we have to have a gentler, more compassionate, a kinder approach to everyone. And so that when we sit with each other, we don't look across the table as if that's the enemy. Instead, we look across the table at someone who shares a different point of view and ask that person, here's my point of view. Tell me what you think about it. Tell me where you think I'm right or wrong. So we can, and then ask that person to share their view so you can see. And right now the rhetoric is too hot. And we've got to tone down the rhetoric and ask people instead of demanding from people. And then see if we can't hit maybe that nerve of connecting with them as a human being. I have spoken with enough people. I put in over 2,000 hours in this investigation. And I haven't told people my conclusions. And I won't. Not at this time, at least. And instead, I'm allowing each of the people, inviting them to share their views, to see if the public can start to see really what this is about. And it's not all one-sided. It's not all one issue. And yet, many people believe there's only one issue. It's more than one issue. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Gary, I'm going to have to get off the line now, but again, I do appreciate your hearing me out and putting this forward.
Well, Ralph, you just took the place of one Utrecht. I'm going to get all these calls. Where's Juan? Where's Utrecht? You're a professor. You're used to talking, right?
Right.
Well, I thank you very much, Ralph, for being on today, and I believe that your ideas are extremely constructive, and there's a lot that we can learn from them, and I'm hopeful that you will, in whatever way you can, start to help in the organization of some forum to take this to another level.
Okay, thanks again.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. And we're out of time. For the other guests, I will have you on next week. All right? I'm sorry, but no, Juan didn't call in, so we will get him on, hopefully, next week. But for all the other panelists who are going to be on, I'm sorry, we'll have you on next week. I'm Gary Nall. This has been a continuation of our forum on trying to understand the problems, make sense of it, and get to a place where we can heal. I believe that that is possible. Not necessarily with the tools currently being used, but it is possible. Have a nice day, everyone.